This program contains adult themes and content.
Don't say we didn't warn you. Welcome, wanderers of the unseen and seekers of the strange. You just stepped into a space between worlds where the veil is thin, the truth is layered, and the stories are powerful. This is Stories from a Trans Witch, a journey through magic, identity, resilience, and community. I'm your host, Autumn Rose, a trans witch, storyteller, and paranormal investigator. Together, we'll explore lived experiences, current events, spirituality, discrimination, and the ways to lift each other up in these hard times. Each episode, I invite you into my circle to hear tales from the margins. Part truth, part spell, always raw. Unreal. So light your candles, pour your tea, breathe deep. You're listening to Stories from a Trans Witch. Now it's time to put on the hat. Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the show. Originally tonight, I was going to be doing an episode on Christian nationalism and them using music to groom children into political warfare. However, that has definitely changed up with the events going on here in the Vancouver-Portland area. So I want to start by addressing the national takeover by the National Guard and the Trump administration. As of Friday, Trump made an announcement that he was going to be sending troops into the war-torn city of Portland, which anybody that's been to Portland, we have our issues just like any other major city, but we are not war-torn. We have Portland PD is working to keep the peace and keep the city in whole. Now, we do have protesting, which according to First Amendment rights is a protected speech. However, this administration seems to think otherwise. So let's talk about this a little bit tonight. First of all, Trump's takeover of Portland. This is highly illegal. There are no grounds. The only ground for Trump to come in and to mobilize the National Guard like we're seeing would be if there was an actual insurrection going on, which there is not. And because of this behavior that we've seen in other cities, such as LA and now Portland, our governor and attorney general already making moves to file the lawsuit against this movement. And, you know, we will continue to stand our ground for our right to protest against this dictatorship that is attempting to take over our nation. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, we need to quit sugarcoating and saying what this behavior is, because Trump has made it very clear. If you do not agree with him, you are an enemy. We've seen this recently in the news, as he has announced that any trans advocates, such as myself here on the radio, or, you know, anybody that opposes this fascist behavior is an enemy of the state and labeled a domestic terrorist. Now, this is a problem because, number one, this is giving power and validating this radical movement, which we are seeing more and more everywhere. And this is not only a danger to anybody that considers himself an advocate of the trans community, this is a clear and present danger to the trans community itself. And I'm going to give you an example of that tonight. So I believe it was Friday, I was up visiting my brother in Longview, Washington, and talking with him and a friend, and they were telling me about a petition that was going on at the local Walmart where this person was trying to get people to sign against trans adolescents competing in sport while also barring them from female spaces such as locker rooms and bathrooms. Now, me and Jason Hassler from Hassling the Paranormal talked about this on my first episode. If there is really an issue with what is between a person's legs while they're using a stall in a public bathroom, who's really the problem here? So I thought about it a little bit over the weekend, and I decided to do some investigative journalism myself. And I went to multiple Walmart locations, and sure enough, I found these people. Now, the first location was the Walmart in Woodlands, Washington, where this one single man was sitting there with this booth and all of this rhetoric, and was just talking about how trans women don't need to be in a locker room or playing sports with females for safety reasons. So originally, I just took pictures of his booth, and then I went inside to talk to Walmart management at that location, and the manager was really nice, and she said, yeah, unfortunately, we we've called the police already, but they're not willing to step in and do anything about it. So I kind of chuckled and I told her about my radio show and I told her, well, I'll go out and talk to the guy. So within 5 minutes of me and addressing him and starting to film, you know, for journalist reasons, I got him to pack up and leave. Now, what's sad about this is the Woodland PD or whoever is law enforcement in that area wouldn't do anything about this. However, when my brother was telling me about the situation in Longview, Washington, they actually arrested this person for refusing to leave and for causing a disturbance. So kudos to Longview PD for that. Well, today at Walmart in Vancouver on Highway 99, I ran into the same group trying to get the same petition signed. So I started immediately challenging them on their view and said, like, okay, well, you know, if you don't want trans people to use these bathrooms and these locker rooms, where are they supposed to go? Because I tried to point out the dangers that trans people use if they were in a locker room or a bathroom with males and how they would be more prone to sexual assault or just standard assault and possibly even worse. And, you know, they instantly got very vocal with me and started recording. So I pulled out my camera and did the same thing. I'm like, okay, well, you're going to record me. I'm going to record you. Let's go. So we started having this conversation and multiple people got involved. These people were like, yes, I'm all about safety in the bathrooms. So I responded with, great, let's talk about it. And this very, very rude woman started immediately coming in on me. Well, I don't want grown men in the bathroom. Well, number one, this proposition's talking about adolescents, not men, so we have a problem with that. And, you know, she went on to go back and forth with me, and I allowed her to speak and to say her piece. And I was like, fine, if you don't want trans individuals in the bathroom, where do they go? Because if we put them into a male bath, they will experience the same dangers and the same concerns that you're bringing up now, and even more so. So let's break this down and look at the facts for a second. So a study done by eScholarship cites that cities and states that adopted gender identity inclusive public accommodation laws saw no increase in bathroom, locker room crimes, or any violations of privacy. In fact, the researchers even went on to describe such incidents as exceedingly rare. In another review done by the National Policing Institute, went on to state that a review of hundreds of sexual assault complaints in two large U.S. cities found no cases of men posing as women or claiming to be transgender to commit bathroom assault. In an article done by the Williams Institute, it said that independent replications and updated beliefs continue to find no evidence that trans-inclusive policies jeopardize the safety of others in the bathroom and emphasize that transgender people are themselves frequently harassed in these spaces. I also want to quote the AP News, where they said that there is no evidence found that the perpetrators of bathroom crimes used a trans policy to access the bathroom. Now let's shift to the other side of this petition for a minute, trans athletes. It looks to be there are about 80 to 90,000 girls in high school sports currently in the state of Washington, for an example. Out of that number, there are about 10 trans individuals max that are competing in sports alongside these girls. If we average that out, that's a percentage of about 0.008%. Roughly the same percentage applies to Oregon as well. So why are we worried about 0.008% of a group competing in sports when we're dealing with a national crisis? This has nothing to do with safety. This is about bigotry, hate, and politics. Because once again, the MAGA movement doesn't want us to look at the fact that cisgender men are the perpetrators in over 90% of sexual assault cases. So to my cis counterparts out there, i.e. women, if you really want to address the issue, then let's talk about these men that are doing these crimes to women and not trans people. Now I want to talk about the group that was actually pushing this petition, who this group particularly happened to be a group of African-American gentlemen, who for all other purposes, I'm going to label as pygmies because you are supporting the MAGA movement. Because right now, the trans community is going through the same thing the African-American community went through. Let's talk about segregation. Until Jackie Robinson broke Major League Baseball color line in 1947, black athletes were barred from playing in any professional league. Similar exclusions existed across football, basketball, and even the Olympic teams. They also experienced a resource disparity. Anybody in a African-American school and community, especially before desegregation, had fewer resources for athletic facilities, coaching, and equipment compared to white schools. They were also more likely to experience exclusion from endorsements, less media support, leading to overall lower salaries. There's a long history of claims that black athletes succeed succeed in sports because of supposed natural physical advantages. Scholars argue these stereotypes erase the hard work, training, and strategies of athletes, reinforce racist myths about biological differences, suggest unfairness where there is none, when in fact, systematic equalities limit opportunities. Sports historians such as John Hoburn and Harry Edwards show how these stereotypes fed into a narrative that black athletes were naturally gifted but not intellectual, which further reinforced racism in coaching and leadership opportunities. Now, while the African-American community is well represented on the field nowadays, they remain underrepresented in coaching, management, and ownership positions, suggesting that structural inequalities persist. In sports like swimming, tennis, golf, and hockey, participation rates among athletes are still low, tied to cost barriers and historic illusions. Now, research has shown disparities in officiating, for an example, you know, an NBA referee study, and media representation. Black athletes are more often described with physical terms, while white athletes are praised for intelligence and leadership. So, in conclusion, there's no credible evidence that African-American athletes have been given unfair advantages. Instead, the evidence strongly shows that racism imposed by systematic disadvantages through exclusion, underfunding, stereotyping, and barriers to leadership roles, claims of advantages usually come from racial stereotypes about a physical ability, which scholars widely reject as pseudoscience. So let's summarize here. Black athletes were barred from certain sports or leagues called color line policies and prevented integration. We had Jim Crow era travel restrictions and accommodations. Even when allowed to play, black athletes sometimes couldn't stay in the same hotels or eat in the same restaurants, especially in the South. Resources, training, and institutional support were often withheld or limited to black athletes. Black players often were channeled into roles that emphasized physicality over strategy or leadership positions. When black athletes raised social justice issues, they faced retaliation, suppression, bans, and loss of opportunities. They had lower pay, fewer endorsements, restricted contracts, and less bargaining power. Even after formal integration, structural bias persisted. Refereeing selection committees, media coverage. Now, despite this intense pressure, black athletes and communities resisted. Some examples are, you know, Jackie Robinson broke the MLB's color barrier. Arthur Ashe used his platform for civil rights advocacy. Muhammad Ali refused to enter the Vietnam War, linking his fight to racial injustice and inequality. The 1968 Olympic athletes raised fist protest became an iconic movement in athlete activism. Over time, many, though not all, barriers have lessened formally. However, structural and cultural inequality remains. Now let's draw a comparison here. Here are the patterns and mechanisms of exclusion and discrimination that the trans, especially trans women and girls athletes currently face. Laws, policies, or governing bodies rules explicitly bar trans athletes from competing in certain categories. Trans athletes face lawsuits, investigations, or threats tied to Title IX equality protections or funding consequences. Trans athletes are often targeted of political rhetoric, moral panic, or narratives about fairness and safety. Trans athletes report exclusion, bullying, stigma, lack of acceptance, and adverse mental health outcomes. Challenges around locker rooms, bathrooms, eligibility criteria, testing protocols, and institutional support. Rights of trans athletes vary widely depending on state, school district, or sports governing bodies. The scientific and policy debates about fairness and performance advantages make the terrain highly contested. Trans athletes may have fewer allies or established institutional support than black athletes did in some contexts because trans individuals are a smaller population. Each legal or institutional defeat can outsize having a chilling effect. And the legal protections, i.e. Title IX, 9 anti-discrimination statuses are being challenged in many courts today. So here's the comparisons and contrast. Both in key areas of overlap, divergency, and complicated nuance in the experience of Black athletes and trans athletes. Both groups have been attacked as unfit, not real, or outsiders to the dominant category. Not real athletes, not the right kind of person for the sport. Discrimination is not only interpersonal, but embedded in formal policy, eligibility rules, league rules, facility rules. Black athletes advocating for racial injustice have been punished. Trans athletes who advocate for or assert their rights can also face backlash or be removed. Some athletes belong to both groups, Black and trans, and may face compounded discrimination. For Black athletes, major legal, social, and civil rights victories have decades of struggle. For trans athletes, much in the same flux and contrast. Both have been targets of moral panic or used in culture wars. The number of Black athletes in mainstream sports is large. Trans athletes are fewer in number statistically. Black athletes have built long traditions of representation, media presence, and institutional presence. So, looking at this, let's stop and reflect for a minute. The history of discrimination against Black athletes provides useful lessons about how exclusion gets naturalized via policy, culture, merit, and narrative, and how struggles unfold over generations. Trans athletes today face discriminations in the same ways that echo the past: exclusionary policies, legitimacy challenges, stigmatizing rhetoric, and unequal access to institutional support. But the context differs. Legal framework, population size, public perception, and the state of institutional support are not the same. A key difference is that many of the formal barriers for Black athletes, segregation, for an example, have been struck down, though structural racism remains. Trans athletes are currently in a more contested legal environment, with sweeping policies being debated and changed in real time. So why does a lot of African-American culture ignore this? Is it the racism in sports is remembered as a past or separate struggle? Trans athletes' issues feel newer and less familiar? Is it a difference in scale and visibility? Do Black athletes feel like they've always been a larger visible group, and trans athletes are fewer in number, often isolated cases? Competing narratives of fairness? Is it racial exclusion was obviously unfair, but trans inclusion is framed as fairness issues, which some accept as face value? Is it internalized or cultural bias? Black communities, like all communities, include a spectrum of views on the LGBTQ issues. Some athletes don't see trans discrimination as connected to their own struggles. Is this a personal investment exiting system where athletes who succeed under current rules may resist changing them? Some fear trans inclusion might undermine the legitimacy of women's sports. Is it fear of backlash or losing opportunities? Speaking up for trans rights may provoke controversy. Is it that Black athletes feel like they're already under scrutiny and that they may be avoiding additional risk? Is it failure to recognize a shared pattern? Past and present oppressions or similar tactics, moral panics, exclusionary rules, stereotype. Without a historical lens, it's easy to miss the parallels. Regardless of what it is, if we're going to change our future and make a better world, not for us, but for these kids that we're talking about in this petition and the world of tomorrow, then it's time that we step aside from our personal bias and start looking at what's right for our culture and what side of history do we want to be on. And with that, we're going to take a break and hear a word from our sponsors. You've been listening to Stories from a Trans Witch.
Programming like this is made possible by support from High Five Cannabis, your local cannabis connection in Vancouver and Stevenson, Washington. High Five offers flower, concentrates, edibles, tinctures, topicals, and more. Whether you're new to cannabis or know what you need, their staff is available to assist. If you go to highfivecannabis.com, spelled H-I-G-H, the number 5, cannabis.com, you can learn about their specials like Munchy Monday, Senior Tuesdays, Waxy Wednesdays, and Loyalty Thursdays. Again, that's highfivecannabis.com.
Oh, you know it! You better work.
Discover our city's hidden gem, hiding right below the sidewalk. Underbar is a speakeasy-themed cocktail lounge located downtown Vancouver. As an LGBTQ-friendly and gay-owned space, it is a go-to destination for weekly events such as comedy, trivia, bingo, and open mic nights. Local artists are featured every first Friday of the month, and every fourth Sunday is Underbar's Underground Drag Brunch Show, 2 to 4 p.m. More information and location can be found at underbarvancouver.com. That's underbarvancouver.com.
You're listening to Stories from a Trans Witch here on KXRW 99.9 Vancouver, Washington. Also streaming on X-Ray FM. Due to the sensitive topics of this show, viewer discretion is advised, and you've been warned. And welcome back to Stories from a Trans Witch. So we've been hitting a pretty hard topic tonight, and I wanted to take a moment to talk about the sponsor break that we had there. Underbar, great bar here in Vancouver for the queer community. Just in case you didn't hear, there's a new show there, and it's called Paranormal Pub, and it's hosted by none other than Jason Hassler from Hassling the Paranormal, here on KXRW as well. So every second at Sunday at 4 o'clock, check out his show there at the bar, and then also you can check out his show anytime on KXRW.fm. These guys that I addressed earlier as pick-me's, I did that for a reason, because they are exhibiting the same behavior as the current administration and bullying a group that is smaller than them, and this is kind of the universal problem that we're seeing here, and where people are being emboldened to show bigotry and hate to others that are different than them. I mean, these guys were stirring up the crowd to try to turn them against me. They were, you know, threatening to get me arrested for simply exercising my First Amendment right, and they were laughing about it and dancing in the parking lot while claiming to be federal workers. And then let's address the woman in the video that, you know, was sitting there saying, well, I'm protecting my right and my safety in the bathroom against men. Okay, first of all, we're not talking about men, we're talking about children. Hopefully you're not in a school bathroom with children either, ma'am, because that could be just as alarming. And then, you know, I said earlier that she called me cancerous, but it was actually her boyfriend that did that, so I stand corrected on that one. But these people are sitting there and encouraging this behavior in public and getting away with it. And why? Because our government will not take a stand and say that this behavior is wrong. Now, if we challenge something that Trump does or something his administration says, then it's labeled automatically as hate speech. Or, you know, anytime something happens in the media that is concerning, it's automatically the left's fault. Let's look at the fact that, you know, our government is facing a shutdown here this week. And unfortunately, there's no compromise with the administration, because there's multiple anti-trans bills that they refuse to remove from the bill, and the Democrats are taking a stand against this, and the Trump administration's willing to let our government shut down over this. So why Americans are going homeless and can't afford to even buy groceries at the store because, you know, food prices are up 40% and even more in some places, and I mean, gas in Washington is at $4.25 plus a gallon, you know, this administration's okay with saying, well, if you're not going to follow our policies, then we're going to let your government shut down. Another thing that the Republicans are pushing is changing the Affordable Care Act to a point where, you know, some people could see their copays go as high as 50 to 80% higher than what they're paying now. And unfortunately, part of me thinks the Trump administration wants this to happen, because number one, if our government shuts down, then labor statistics and government economic forecasts will be shut down, and we won't have the realistic numbers of how bad our country's actually doing right now, which makes it easier for this dictator and his so-called regime to put out whatever propaganda they want, and we have no way of fact-checking the actual evidence. I mean, if you research, there's farmers out there right now saying these tariffs are destroying them. You know, our manufacturing forecast is the weakest it's been in years, and they're saying that we're going to continue to see drop. Meanwhile, there's people out there that are saying that Trump has already made hundreds of millions and possibly billions of dollars off of the United States by using the office in a corrupt way to benefit himself financially. We have the director of ICE who has been accused of openly accepting a cash bribe in broad daylight in a restaurant, actually. Trump is going after his political enemies, both in the media, the Jimmy Kimmel situation, and also his political enemies on a government level. Like, the former FBI director is facing federal indictment for falsifying information about Trump when all he did was report that Trump started a insurrection on January 6th. And instead of dealing with these issues as a bipartisan country, we're sitting here arguing over who's in the bathroom and what's between their legs. Is this really the issue that we need to be focusing on? 1% of our population here in the United States? Or all the corruption that's going on right in front of our eyes? Let's go back to the Epstein file for a minute. You know, you really want to focus on child predators. Let's open the Epstein files and see whose name's in there and who had a part of that egregious act, because those victims deserve justice. But no, MAGA wants to sit here and focus on a bunch of made up predators that may be stalking women in the bathroom versus a list of actual criminals that is sitting in our FBI right now. Proving even more why MAGA voted for Trump, because they're exhibiting the same behavior. This is a deflection. This is gaslighting. This is, hey, I'm going to point out everything that you may be doing so you're not looking to see what I'm actually doing over here. And as long as this behavior goes on in our country, we are doomed to see the same thing over and over again that we've been watching all of 2025. And I ask you, the American people, when enough is enough. Because these executive orders and legislation that's been put forth by President Trump are very harmful to the trans community. They're using these arguments and saying these orders are often invoke religious freedom as justification, claiming that acknowledging trans rights infringes on Christian liberties. On February 5th, Trump signed an executive order prohibiting transgender women from competing in women's sports. We've been talking about that the whole episode. This is the third such order in his presidency that has cited the need for protection against biological women from unfair competition. Now, the impact of these orders is a direct impact on trans athletes, preventing them from participating in sports that align with their genders. This not only affects their ability to compete, but has a psychological and social repercussion. And as it reinforces the idea that their identities are not valid, this leads to healthcare restrictions. The Supreme Court decision in United States versus Scamitti, hopefully I'm saying that right, a Tennessee Senate bill, which bans gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors. This law restricts access to essential healthcare services such as hormone replacement therapy and gender-affirming surgeries to anyone under the age of 18. The court's decision was based on the argument that such care is experimental and potentially harmful. This decision had a profound impact on transgender youth, who often rely on these treatments for physical and mental well-being. And restricting access to care can lead to increased rates of depression, anxiety, and even suicide among transgender adolescents. Now let's talk about educational censorship. Project 2025, a blueprint for Christian nationalist government, aims to eliminate educational material related to race, gender, and LGBTQ identities, labeling them as nauseous tenets. This initiative seeks to remove any mention of transgender issues from school curriculum, including history, literature, and health education. The goal is to create a patriot education system that aligns with Christian values. Now, such censorship can lead to a lack of understanding and acceptance of trans individuals among students, fostering an environment of ignorance and potential hostility. Transgender students may feel marginalized and unsupported in their educational environment. Christian nationalists often characterize transgender people as an ideology linked to pornography and sexualization of kids. The rhetoric is used to delegitimize transgender identities and justify restricted policies. For example, they falsely claim that transgender people are a threat to children and traditional family values, often citing religious texts and interpretations. Such inflammatory language contributes to a climate of fear and hostility toward the transgender individuals and potentially leading to increased discrimination, harassment, and violence. And there's already been a rise in violent incidents targeting transgender individuals, often fueled by Christian nationalist rhetoric. For instance, the killing of Sam Nudick, a trans man from Minnesota, was mourned by religious leaders who stood in solidarity with the trans community against such violence. However, the rhetoric surrounding trans issues often incites violence with perpetrators citing religious or moral justifications. Same thing I covered in the video earlier that we'll be posting online later. And there also highlights a real-world consequence of anti-trans rhetoric and policy. This has led to the rise in legal challenges, such as, you know, Christian nationalists have been involved in numerous legal challenges aimed at restricting transgender rights. Cases like Little versus Hecox and West Virginia versus BPJ, which involved transgender athletes and are being celebrated by Christian nationalists as a moral victory. These cases often centered on arguments that allowing transgender athletes to compete in sports that aligns with their gender identity is unfair and biologically incorrect. The Supreme Court decision in these cases could set precedents that further restricts transgender rights as well. Legal victories for Christian nationalists can lead to widespread restrictions on transgender rights, affecting not only athletes, but also other aspects of public life, such as bathroom access and even healthcare. Not to mention there's international influence. Christian nationalists have also targeted LGBTQ protections internationally. For example, Project 2025 aims to end the Department of State's LGBTQ equality incentives in Africa, where countries like Uganda have erected laws criminalizing same-sex conduct, potentially punishable by death. Now, these incentives seek to roll back global LGBTQ advancements, arguing that such protections are Western and imposed views that conflict with local cultural and religious values. Now, such policies can have devastating impacts on LGBTQ individuals in these countries where they are already marginalized and vulnerable. They can be led to increased persecution, violence, and even death for those who identify as transgender or LGBTQ. And this is not a what-if scenario. We already saw it. Trump enacted this, and it's in the middle of a legal battle right now in the federal courts. Christian nationalists use media platforms to spread information and fear about transgender individuals, often invoking biblical interpretation to justify their opposition to transgender rights, claiming that transgender identities are against God's plan. Right-wing media outlets and religious leaders frequently portray transgender people as a threat to traditional values and society as a whole. They use emotive language and misleading statistics to support their arguments. This media influence can shape public opinion and policy, leading to increased discrimination and hostility towards transgender individuals. It also contributes to a culture of misunderstanding and fear surrounding transgender identity. Transgender rights have become a hot-button issue in political campaigns, with Christian nationalists using them as wedge issues to garner support. The 2024 election, we saw transgender rights weaponized by the Trump campaign. Despite the community being a small minority of the population, political candidates often use anti-trans rhetoric to appeal to their base, promising to protect traditional values and family from what they perceive as a threat posed by transgender individuals. This political manipulation can lead to enactments of restrictive laws and policies, as well as a climate of fear, hostility toward the transgender community. Christian nationalist groups often organize rallies and protests against transgender rights. For example, the May Day USA rally in Seattle, which was led by Matt Shear's On Fire Ministry, attracted families with offers of free haircuts and bicycles, using such events to spread their anti-trans message. These events often featured inflammatory speeches and signs that demonize trans individuals, portraying them as a threat to children and society. They are designed to rally support and mobilize opposition to transgender rights. Such protests can create a sense of community among those who share the anti-trans view, while also intimidating and frightening trans individuals and their allies. They contribute to a climate of hostility and potential violence. These detailed examples illustrate the manufactured and aggressive approach taken by Christian nationalists in their attack on the trans community, and it encompasses legislative, educational, and cultural fronts. Each of these examples has a real-world consequence and effect the lives of transgender individuals and their families in a profound way. Now, the crazy thing was in 2024, when Trump was campaigning, he said he had nothing to do with Christian nationalism or Project 2025. Funny enough, we're seeing all his executive orders and they all line up with that movement. Now, one of these Christian nationalist voices is Michael Knowles, who is a conservative political commentator, author, and media host. He has worked for The Daily Wire since 2016 and has hosted The Michael Knowles Show, a daily political podcast, since 2017. Now, I'm going to play a clip from the CPAC conference a few years ago, and we're going to see what he said about transgender rights.
There can be no middle way in dealing with transgenderism. It is all or nothing. If transgenderism is true, if men really can become women, then it's true for everybody of all ages. If transgenderism is false, as it is, if men really can't become women, as they cannot, then it's false for everybody, too. And if it's false, then we should not indulge it. especially since that indulgence requires taking away the rights and customs of so many people. If it is false, then for the good of society, and especially for the good of the poor people who have fallen prey to this confusion, transgenderism must be eradicated from public life entirely. The whole preposterous ideology at every level.
Now let that sink in for a minute. Now, first of all, Mr. Knowles, I want to correct you because there's no such thing as transgenderism. Not sure where you got that word. Unfortunately, whoever hoped you write your speech missed that one. But what do you mean by eradicated? These are people that we're talking about here. How will they be eradicated? How will you remove them from society? Is that similar to what we're seeing here in 2025 with our rights being challenged by the Trump administration and transgender advocates being labeled as domestic terrorists? Something to think about. And with that, we'll be right back. You're listening to Stories from a Trans Witch.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
우리는 여러분의 언어를 구사합니다.
我们说你的语言.
Nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
中多语言我们古板.
Big thank you to Georgie's Garage and Grill for making programming like this possible. They offer a full bar and signature meals for breakfast, lunch, and dinner that is not the usual bar food. Their food will keep you coming back for more, dine in or take out. They also offer a venue space for live music and community events. Georgie's Garage and Grill is located downtown Vancouver at 606 Broadway Street. More information can be found at georgiesgng.com.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morel Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morel Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop, and since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morel Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morel Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morelinc.com. That's morelinc.com.
This program contains adult themes and content.
Don't say we didn't warn you. And welcome back. I want to talk about some of the real-world consequences to what we've been discussing tonight. And in order to do that, we're going to talk about the life of Nex Benedict, a 16-year-old non-binary student from Osceola, Oklahoma, whose story has shaken our community, our movement, and our conscience. Nex should still be here. They should still be drawing, still playing Minecraft, still laughing with their cat suits. They should still be learning, exploring, and dreaming about life ahead of them. Instead, Nex's life was ended far too soon, following a brutal attack in their school bathroom, after enduring relentless bullying and harassment. So tonight we honor Nex by telling their story, and we ask ourselves together, how do we fight for justice, not just for Nex, but for every trans and non-binary kid walking into school tomorrow morning? Nex Benedict was 16 years old. They loved nature, The Walking Dead, drawing, reading, and games, Ark and Minecraft. The imaginative world where survival and creation are in your hands. Their family is connected to the Choctaw Nation. They were still learning together about gender, identity, and love. Like so many parents, Nex's mom and family were on a journey one step at a time with understanding and supporting their child. On February 7th of 2024, Nex was viciously attacked in a school bathroom by 3 older girls. A witness said they heard Nex's head slamming against the floor over and over. Nex was taken to a hospital, released, and returned the next day in worsened condition. On February 8th, Nex died. Less than a day after the beating. And in the weeks that followed, we learned more. That the school never even reported the fight to the police. That Nex had endured bullying for over a year. That state policies, like bans on trans students using bathrooms aligning with their identities, helped create the climate where the violence became possible. When we say Next's name, we're not only honoring who they were, we're shining a light on the failures that stole their future. Unfortunately, Next's story is not an isolated tragedy. It's part of a larger pattern. The Human Rights Campaign and the University of Connecticut surveyed nearly 13,000 LGBTQ youth in 2022. The numbers are staggering. Over half of the trans and gender expansive youth felt unsafe in at least one school setting. A third feared using the bathroom. Half feared locker rooms. Two-thirds were bullied, teased, or harassed in just the last year. One in five were physically attacked within the past 30 days. Now think about it. Every hallway, every lunchroom, every bus ride can become a battlefield. And while kids suffer, politicians fan the flames. Online accounts like Libs for TikTok, now appointed to the Library Advisory Board, fueled harassment that doesn't stop at the screen. Their post leads to bomb threats, teachers resigning, principals forced from their jobs, and most tragically, students like Next left unprotected. We are living through a second wave of panic, like the satanic panic of the 1980s. But this time, the target is queer and trans youth. Fear, exaggeration, repetition, lawmaking. And behind it all, a message to children like Next that their lives don't matter. But their lives do matter. Next's life mattered, and so does every young person listening right now. So where do we go from here? How do we turn grief into action? Well, first, we demand accountability. For Next, for the school that failed to act, for leaders who spread hate, the Human Rights Campaign is calling for a full investigation, and so should we. Second, we need to demand better protections for LGBTQ youth. Laws that affirm their right to safety, to dignity, and to learn without fear. Third, we need to challenge the media. Too many report dead-named Next, misgendered them, or erased who they were. That disrespect is not just sloppy, it adds to violence. We must demand accuracy, and we must demand compassion. Fourth, we hold social media companies accountable. Hate does not stay online. It spills out into the classrooms, into the neighborhoods, into lives cut short. Platforms must do more to stop the spread of violence, masquerading as free speech. And finally, we hold each other. Parents, teachers, neighbors, friends. We all have a role to listen, to protect, to intervene, to create safer spaces for every Next still walking among us, because Next should still be here. And as we close tonight, I want us to sit with two truths. First, grief, the heartbreak of losing Next, a young life full of love for cats and creativity and online worlds, stolen by cruelty and indifference. And second, responsibility. We must owe it to Next and to every queer and trans child to fight like hell for a future where their safety is not negotiable. We've been here before. In the 80s, it was the satanic panic and Satanist in the daycares. Now it's trans kids in schools. The faces have changed, but the patterns are the same. Fear, exaggeration, repetition, lawmaking. Every law, every post, and every headline becomes a lesson plan. The question is, what lesson are we really teaching here? Are we teaching that children should fear differences? Or are we teaching them to embrace differences? Are we teaching them that cruelty wins or compassion does? Next's story must not end in silence. It must become fuel for our courage. We have to stand up against this anti-trans rhetoric in this country. We have to take back our rights. We have to stand strong against a opposition that tells us we don't have a right to exist. This is the only way that we win this battle. But more importantly, we need to stand together and stands as a community. Even in our LGBT community recently, I've seen so many people starting to have division among each other because of things getting difficult, and that's exactly what they want. When they can separate us, they can defeat us, but together we stand strong. We stand stronger than we are individually, and you know, maybe if nothing else for our children, we can give them a better future. And you know, sometimes that means us making sacrifices and maybe doing things that are not the most comfortable and not what we would choose to do with our lives. But you know, sometimes advocacy and doing what's right comes at a price. Now, I wanted to play a clip from Sylvia Rivera, one of the trans pioneers of the gay community. But unfortunately, I can't play the clip for FCC reasons, but I am going to quote her speech. And this comes from the 1973 New York Pride. So for those of y'all that aren't aware, back then it was unacceptable to even be trans in the gay community. And if you go back and watch the original video, you can actually see these women's activists and gay men asking if they should even let Sylvia on the stage. So Sylvia gets up there and she starts off, "I may be," and then immediately the crowd starts booing her and cussing at her and hissing at her. Now bear with me as I read Sylvia's speech, because number one, she was very worked up and emotional that day and did use a lot of cussing, which unfortunately we can't do here on the air, so I'll have to replace words and mute some words. So Sylvia tries to start by saying, "I may," and she's immediately met with hisses, boos, and more, and this is from the gay community. And in all her trans fierceness, she says, "You better quiet down. I've been trying to get up here all day for your gay brothers and your gay sisters in jail that write to me every day and ask for your help, and you all don't do a thing." I'm sorry, I'm having to paraphrase here. "Have you ever been beaten up and had the R word done to you or ended up in jail? Now think about it. They have beaten me up. They have R'd me. They have spent much of their money in jail to get there and try to get sex changes. The women I have tried to fight for their sex changes or to become women on the women's liberation, and they write star not to the women's group. They do not write to men. They write star because we're trying to do something for them. I've been in jail. I've been R'd and beaten many times by men, homosexual men, that do not belong in homosexual shelters. But do you do anything for me? No. You tell me to go and hide my tail between my legs. I will not put up with this anymore. I have been beaten. I have had my nose broken. I have been thrown in jail. I have lost my job. I have lost my apartment for gay liberation. And you all treat me this way. What is wrong with you? Think about that. I do not believe in a revolution, but you all do. I believe in gay power. I believe in us getting our rights, or else I would not be out here fighting for our rights. That's all I wanted to say to you people. If you all want to know what the people in jail, and do not forget Bambi and Dora Mark, Kenny Metzwerk, and other gay people in jail. Come and see the people at Star House on 20th Street, on 640th East 12th Street, between B and C, apartment 14. And that was what Sylvia was facing in 1973, the transphobia from our own community. And now we face a level of transphobia that can be just as damaging from the MAGA community. And earlier I mentioned that, you know, trans advocacy comes at a price. Sylvia almost took her life that day. She was so exhausted from her battle and from her fight and from being invalidated by her own community. And with that, we'll be right back. Some shows invite you in. This one summons you. Every third Friday from 5 to 7 p.m., Blind Country with Doug Cock lights the lanterns at the edge of the map. 2 hours of honky-tonk haunting, lonesome heart lullabies, and the kind of storytelling that turns dust to gold. Expect murder ballads with a heartbeat, highway hymns with a hat, and deep cuts that feel like they've been writing in your glove box for years. Doug is your road witch and ringmaster, stirring steel guitars and fiddles fire, and voices rough as the desert sage. Bring your boots, your broken compass, and your best singing ghost. Cross the country line, cross the veil, and come home by radio. Blind Country, every third Friday, 5 to 7, here on KXRW 99.9, Vancouver, Washington, and streaming anywhere in the world on X-Ray FM. Some radio shows shine a light, while others go straight into darkness. Join Hassling the Paranormal with Jason Hassler on KXRW 99.9 FM Vancouver, where the veil between worlds is never closed. Join him in the haunted corners of KXRW every second and fourth Thursday from 6 to 7 as he leads the way, chasing shadows, calling out whispers, and hassling the spirits that most people would rather leave alone. Expect ghost stories that chill the spine, haunted history that refuses to stay buried, and encounters that prove the unknown is closer than you think. Jason's not just hunting the paranormal, he's daring to answer back. So light your candle, draw your circle, and tune in, because the night is full of questions, and Jason is here to hassle the answer. Once again, that's Hassling the Paranormal with Jason Hassler, every second and fourth Thursday from 6 to 7 on KXRW 99.9 FM Vancouver, and streaming worldwide on X-Ray FM.
Really on the inside.
that was Katy Perry with Unconditional. I know it's been a rough night tonight, and what a way to start our show here on KXRW, but, you know, sometimes we have to stand in the light and stand for what's right, and, you know, that's why I have the little catchphrase, it's time to put on the hat, because when I put on the hat, I'm doing something that I don't necessarily want to do, but it's a job that needs done in our community, and at the end of the day, that's what unconditional love looks like. It's when you sacrifice in order to serve others. When you get a chance, go over to Facebook and check out the Facebook page and, you know, comment on what you thought of tonight's show. And I'm always looking for input and topics that we can talk about next time. So until then, keep the tea ready and the light lit. I'll see you in the shadows. You've walked with me through the space between worlds, where magic, truth, and resilience intertwine. This has been Stories from a Trans Witch with me, Autumn Rose. Thanks for sharing this circle, for listening, and for keeping the flame alive. Until next time, remember, your story is your spell, your truth is your power, and together we shine brighter in the darkness. Stay safe, stay strong, and stay magical. You've been listening to Stories from a Trans Witch here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington, community radio for the people, by the people, and always streaming live at X-Ray FM.